Hello, and welcome to Reading the Library Book, in which I read one chapter from the library book at a time. We are now on chapter 25, and still called the library book for the time being. My name is Emily, and this is my book and my podcast, and I thank you for listening to the podcast and listening to the book. So, without further ado, let's just get into chapter 25, which is called Dorothea Crane. The thought that an author might be working against us put a chill over everyone. The idea that someone knew where we were and might be using that information to catch us gave everyone pause. I saw a couple of librarians shiver at the thought.
Kenbella, just open the book again, said Toti. We will not know until we know. We have to proceed one step at a time, little by little, like a bird making his nest. Maybe there is another drawing by now.
I opened the book to the page of us, looking at the book. I turned the page after it. It was still blank.
Psst, plankton and algae, said Toti. Logs and sticks! I really thought there'd be something there.
She was pacing angrily when Mahout put a hand on her shoulder, and then a hand on the book again.
So, Leandra, turn the page back to the last image that we have, said Mahout.
I turned the page back.
So, what are we reading in that image? Asked Mahout.
This book, I said.
So, she said, yes, the cover is the same. But can we see the drawing on the page of the book that we're looking at? That is, has she simply made another smaller version there, or is there, maybe, a clue?
She'd already leaned over my shoulder to examine it more closely.
Ha!
She exclaimed.
So, it is different. I can't see what it is exactly, but the image doesn't repeat. It's something else.
We need a magnifying glass, I said.
Immediately, four magnifying glasses appeared in front of me.
Wow, I said. Do you all carry magnifying glasses everywhere?
Of course, said Eamon. Reading must be accessible to everyone, even those who don't see so well.
Mahout peered at the drawing, and I took the magnifying glass Eamon offered me. Mahout was right. The cover looked the same as the cover in my lap, but the picture on the page was the picture of a tower, surrounded by clouds. The composition was the same as the image of us, but on the book, it was clearly a tower with one room more brightly colored than the others. It looked like the room was painted red, but it glowed red, like a light shining all around it. In the window hung a lantern. We passed around the book. I began to look around the square.
Anyone have a telescope? I asked. I figured maybe since everyone had magnifying glasses, perhaps they'd have the opposite sort of lens, too.
Toti, Mahout, and Cooper shook their heads.
Can't read with a telescope, said Cooper, by way of explanation.
However, Eamon pulled one from his bag.
It is helpful in the desert.
I took it from him and looked around at all the buildings. Some were tall, but none of them looked exactly like the drawing. But I did see a tower, and what looked like ivy climbing the walls. Without the telescope, the ivy was virtually invisible, but with it, I could see that the ivy had a curious quality in that it seemed to have grown only toward one window. It was around the 17th floor, and inside appeared to glow red. In the window hung a lantern. We set off in that direction after looking at a map that Kirzaka pointed out in one of the books. We made our way through the canals of the city, with Kirzaka leading the way in the water, sometimes wading, sometimes swimming. Plato, the crocodile, and Felix, the turtle, brought up the rear of our little band of explorers. I rode on the raft with Eamon, Taboos, and Cooper. Toti and Mahout rode the elephant. After many twists and turns, we found ourselves at the entrance of the tower. It had a colorful lobby. Each panel of each wall was a different color. We figured the animals might not be welcome, and also might give us away. So Eamon and I decided to go in, while the rest continued their research into the board. We took a brightly colored elevator to the 17th floor, which overwhelmed us with pink when we stepped into the corridor. We looked at all the doors. They didn't have numbers on them. Not like the hotels I'd seen in movies. They had squares of varying shades of pink. As we walked along the hall, the squares gradually went from pink to red, just gradually changing hue as we went. Aside from the subtle differences in color, they looked identical. We tried to imagine the front of the building to work out where Dorothea might be. We narrowed down the possibilities to the three shades of red in front of us. "Should we just try them all?" I asked Eamon. Eamon shrugged and approached the one in the middle, his fist raised to knock. Just then, the door next to us was flung open and a woman with long, flying white hair swung her head in both directions down the hall before ushering us hurriedly through her door. She shut the door quickly behind us, latching a complex set of puzzle latches before turning around to face us again.
"Selim," said Eamon. "Are you Dorothea Crane?"
"Oh, sit, she said. "Yes, that's me. You found me out. Now sit, and we'll get you sorted with a cup of tea and some biscuits."
We sat on her sofa, which was a red sateen, embroidered with images of books. She ran back to the door, peered out the peephole, then disappeared into the kitchen. There was a series of clatterings, and then she reappeared with a tray on which was a red china teapot with two small cups. All around us were easels on which were hung various illustrations in different states of being finished. Some were just a handful of lines, some were full sketches, some were half colored in, and some were complete. On each easel there hung a pair of glasses that reminded me of the Viewmaster toy I had. They were sort of like binoculars, but of their own special design. The image on the easel next to us was almost done and featured Johanna Juditha between two big guys in uniforms being hurried away from the gate. I pointed it out to Eamon, and Dorothea said,
"Yes, yes, she's in trouble. But we are all of us in trouble, aren't we? I'm glad you got my message. I fear you may be the only hope for all the books in Akita and beyond."
"Us?" I asked.
"Oh, yes," said Dorothea. "I can only write the books from here. It is all I can contribute, but you may be able to convince the board to change their crazy minds."
"I doubt they will listen to us," said Eamon. "We are all on the withdrawal list."
Dorothea took a sip of the tea she'd poured.
"Have some," she said.
There was only one cup left on the tray. Eamon gestured for me to take it, and I tried to get him to take it before Dorothea realized that she'd drunk the tea she'd meant for us, and she rushed back to the kitchen to get another cup. We looked at the picture of Johanna Juditha, and Eamon remarked that though she was in trouble, there was something about her face that seemed more settled and clear than he'd ever seen.
"She is stronger than she looks," he said, "and she is fighting for what she believes in. She will find a way. But I do worry about the Omphalos of the Omphalos and her key."
I nodded, then I leaned in and said, "I have it." Eamon sighed with relief and said out loud,
"Our Johanna Juditha is very wise."
Dorothea returned with another cup, and we sipped at the tea while she explained the situation. She and Roscius Granite had voted no on the proposition to get rid of the books and had understood immediately the need to go into hiding. Dorothea had come here, to the waterways, and only kept in touch with Granite via his inventions.
"There he is," she said, pointing to a drawing on the other side of the room.
It was only partly done, but the sketch suggested a friendly bearded man with messy hair that made him look a little bit like Albert Einstein. He appeared to be surrounded by gears, tools, and other mechanical objects.
"I don't know where he is exactly, but we keep tabs on each other with those," she said, pointing to the binoculars fitted to the top of the painting.
I asked if I could look through them, and Dorothea waved me over. I stood on my tiptoes and peered into the binoculars. There I saw Roscius Granite's workshop. I saw him pick up a book and examine its binding. It made him seem very close. Eamon said he was glad to know that they were both safe and not too isolated. He told her that we'd learned a bit about what the chair was trying to do. He wondered if she had ideas about how to stop her.
"Oh, yes," she said, nodding. I do. I have been studying this for some time. I know her plans and her weaknesses. First, she only controls the libraries of Akita. She has no power over its branches beyond it. That is where you and your friends come in."
Then she looked me right in the eyes and said,
"That is why I took your library."
So that's chapter 25, Dorothea Crane. And my question for you is, one, were you surprised? Two, was the journey to get to her, finding her, like, how did that feel for you? Were you like, oh, we're there too quickly, or it felt just right? I used to have a whole lot more there, and I cut it. So I'm wondering if I cut too much, like, do they find her too easily? Or are you just happy to, like, go straight there? Or maybe you felt like it was still too long. I don't know. Let me know. Yeah. So I'd also love to know from this vantage point, before you go on to the next chapter, if you have theories or ideas about why Dorothea Crane took her library. And if you have thoughts about her now that you've heard this chapter. I'd just love to know where your mind goes from here. And I will give you all of the answers as I know them in the next chapter. But hearing your thoughts now would be very useful. The way to let me know is either at the email, which is leandralibrary@gmail.com, or the Google voicemail box, which is 646-847-8758. Again, that is 646-847-8758. And you can reach out to me in any other way you know how as well. So feel free. Yes. Any other things I need to tell you? I don't think so. Oh, some of you might be interested in a sort of other project that I have going on at the moment, and some of you already know very well. I have an album of lullabies that I started making about 8 years ago, actually. So that's one of the other things that I do is I sing and I sometimes write songs. So if you're already on the website for the Reading the Library book, you could just click over to the music section where there's an album called Lullabies that might be of interest. That's, you know, that one is at least a very child-friendly. It was made for the children of friends of mine. Most of them, I think. Yeah. So if you want to hear some lullabies, go and check those out. It's emilyrainbowdavis.com/lullabies. And they are also on Spotify
and they should be coming up on some other music platforms as well soon. So if you're interested in hearing some songs that help you go to sleep, lullabies for you.
So that was chapter 25. I will see you next time for chapter 26.
Bye!